Blog Talk Radio.
All right, it's another episode of The Philosophy Show. It's episode number 153. My name is Thomas, your host. It's blogtalkradio.com/philosophy. And today's September 1st. It's 12:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And today's title is Common Sense, Competition, Consistency, and Here's Your Vaccine for Stupidity. Because that's how vaccines work, right? You just get a little bit of it, and then you're able to, you know, be have defenses against it later. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of stupidity. So, well, there's a couple. So those are all just different issues going to cover over. And if you want to call in, actually, this is a call-in show. The toll-free number is area code 646-929-1344. That's area code 646-929-1344. And so common sense, competition, consistency, here's your vaccine for stupidity. So common sense and competition is going to be one topic. Consistency is going to be another one. And vaccines is going to be yet another one. You want to work backwards, and we can talk about whatever you want. You want to call in. This is a half an hour show. It's a call-in show. Let's talk about, let's just go right into vaccines. Because recently, it's been in the news, you know, some people are called like vaccine deniers, just kind of like GMO deniers. They must be both being paid and bought for by the big pharmaceutical or Monsanto companies. But, you know, one side of the argument, one side of the fence is it's my body. I should be able to do what I want. You know, you can't force me to inject something into my body that I don't want. I have sovereignty over my body. And also, what is it affecting you? I mean, if you're so scared of, you know, whatever you might catch, then just you take the vaccine and then you don't have to worry about it, right? Now, there is an argument against that that some people are trying to put out, because they're saying, trying to make the argument that the people, the small percentage of the people who don't take vaccines are actually contributing to the demise of people who do take vaccines, because some of the people who do take vaccines might have children or older folks or people that have sensitive immune systems that they can't take the vaccines. So by you not taking the vaccine, you might be a carrier of whatever disease. And even though most people would be safe from your, you know, spreading it, being contagious, the few people in society that might be immune deficient who can't legitimately, quote unquote, take the vaccines, you would be endangering them. Now, my argument is those people would be such small numbers in between little pockets that, no, you probably wouldn't be endangering them. Who knows? Maybe you have your own reasons. Most people who probably don't take vaccines are probably not going to get as infected either. They might be people that stay home, might be people that use natural herbals. And again, I have nothing against vaccines per se. I do believe, like, you know, vaccines did really pretty much eradicate polio, did do a lot of good things. There is some good scientific evidence, of course, of taking a smidgen of something, letting your body's defenses work against it to build an antibody, and then you're prepared if your body has defenses for that, if it ever encounters such a thing again, completely against it. But I do think how it's distributed sometimes by shots, you know, using like mercury and thimerosal as a preservative can be dangerous. And I do think maybe taking a bunch of them at a time. And besides that, I do think it is a right of someone to decide on their own. And I do think there is incentive of big pharmaceutical companies who have gotten large billion-dollar contracts, probably, definitely in the tens of millions, from the governments to purchase these big projects. I mean, that is welfare. And so they would love nothing more. I mean, they've already forced us through Obamacare to purchase private corporate insurance. I mean, that is the first time in history where we were forced to buy a product from a private industry. And if you don't, you get a fine through the IRS. And, you know, they would like to push that as far as they can take it. You know, you have to take therapies. You have to go to a shrink. You have to take these vaccines. And who knows what the vaccines are going to be like in the future. And who knows what they're going to force you to do. You have to, you know, have certain DNA things for your kids, manipulation, and so on, so to prevent them from having disease or whatever. Now, again, that does not mean I'm against the science of vaccines. You know, let the competition and free market work. It is survival of the fittest, but there's a difference between survival of the fittest and survival of the fittest with free choice. So let the survival of the fittest, let the best ideas win through the competition of the marketplace. You know, the people that are going to die off, they're going to die off anyways, but let them die off from their own free choice with the morality of having freedom in society. And we don't know what some of these long-term consequences. I hate people getting or hearing about people getting on the bandwagon of these big pharmaceutical companies. Without a doubt, there have been huge government contracts to these big pharma companies and these GMO companies. I have nothing against GMOs in essence either, but I do have some problems with them. I do think that they should be labeled. Why? Because they get a patent for it. They get a patent to get a certain kind of corn that they prevent anyone else from using the seeds. And so if you get a patent for it, you can no longer, you know, the technical name is probably worse than some kind of Latin name. It's probably like, you know, C3PO EB6497-80. I mean, that's probably the technical term, and that's what they should have to call it in the ingredients, because you can't have it both ways. Either you can't get a patent for it and everyone else has it because it's a natural plant, or it's actually not a natural plant and you have to label it exactly what it is, what you got that darn patent for in the first place that you're suing small farmers for, because you're not quarantining these plants from in nature and you're cross-contaminating them. You know, I have no problem with GMOs as long as you can guarantee that it's, you know, people should treat GMOs the same way that these people want to treat unvaccinated people. The people that are decide not to get vaccinated, you know, some people want to quarantine them. Well, that's what I would say with the GMOs. Have your GMOs, study them. You know, who knows? It might be great. Someday we might have X-Men powers. Someday we might be able to eradicate things and learn more about our bodies. And I think we should spend more money researching it. It should be publicly funded as well as privately funded. However, there is a principle that you can do that as long as you don't harm others. And we don't have long-term studies on this. So what are the conditions? It should be absolutely quarantined. That's common sense. That's reasonable. That already is a law as far as most GMOs go, like salmon. You know, they have to quarantine it and they have to create salmon that can't reproduce. Because what if, you know, because GMO salmon, the fish, they make them extra fat, you know, because you get more bang for your buck. But if you actually let the extra fat ones get out in the wild, they might reproduce. And then in their journey, when they have to jump over stuff, because they usually have to swim up rivers and stuff, the extra fat ones are probably not going to make it. So there's unintended consequences. I'm saying make your GMO corn, but make them in greenhouses. Make sure they're completely quarantined. Make sure that they don't have seeds that can reproduce with natural corn. You know, most corn out in the wild anymore isn't natural. There's things called super weeds that are being created we don't know the long-term consequences. Some of the science that is hiding the consequences is just as dire and suspicious as like the tobacco companies had, you know, back in the 1960s and 70s and 50s when they knew this stuff was causing, you know, bad things, results, and they're hiding it from the public. And that's the same way I feel about GMOs. I mean, I feel like, have it. You have a choice. Make it. Study it. We need to study more on it. I'm not saying we don't need to not study more on it. We need to study more on it. But it needs to be quarantined and can't be able to harm the natural cycle. You know, we already have an experiment going on with this earth. And so don't let it out into the wild. You know, until we know exactly what we're doing, which we don't. I mean, it's just so obvious, such common sense, and people, some people, I mean, they sound so bought and sold, and they want to make themselves seem smarter when they're making themselves seem dumb. They sound like people who say cigarettes are good for you. So, you know, looks like you already had the stupidity if you don't want to give people freedom of choice. Here's another stupidity vaccine. You know, let's have less options instead of more options. Yeah, that's a good idea. You know, let's have less options in these presidential debates. You know, Hillary and Donald Trump are good for us. There's your stupidity vaccine. You know, if you vote, if you don't vote for Hillary, then you're voting, then it's a vote for Trump. If you vote for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, that's a vote for Trump or Hillary. You know, so hopefully you see those fallacies. Here's some other fallacies. You know, we have competition in everything else in life. You know, not everything has to be Burger King versus McDonald's versus Pepsi versus Coca-Cola. I mean, when we have crony capitalism, then you get some government-created monopolies because they get these big government contracts. You know, when the government invests things publicly, like the DNA project, that should be, you know, general public license, commons, you know, and everyone should be able to benefit from it, and we could get so much more. In fact, I think the solution to the patent laws is just get rid of them completely. You would have a spurn economic system like you've never seen. There could still be incentives. Instead of, like, if I was an inventor and I created this new thing and, you know, I wanted some incentive, I would say instead of the patent laws where we currently have, where I have the complete 100% license for that product that I invented, or I should say discovered, for the next 7 years, what should be the rule instead? Because what if I just sit on it and sell it to a corporation and then they hide it and never let the public see, get the day of light for it? Well, what should be is when I register a patent, it should be a public patent where people get the blueprints to it. But if they want to create and manufacture it and distribute it, they have to pay me 10% of whatever their profits are for the next 7 years. So that way it's a win-win-win. It's a win for the inventor because I'll be getting 10%. I might be a good inventor, but I might not be a good marketer or, you know, distributor or manufacturer. It's a win for the salespeople who can actually, maybe they're not a good inventor, but they might, you know, be really good at distributing this. And it's a good win for the consumer. And the competition is good. The people who hate competition are the people who we need to be scared of. So I'm not telling you who to vote, whether it's Trump, Hillary, Gary Johnson, Jill Stein. It shouldn't matter. If you want Trump to win, you should still want Gary Johnson to be in the debates. If you want Hillary Clinton to win, you still should want Jill Stein or Gary Johnson in the debates. It's a process that matters. Let the chips fall where they may. You know, Trump would sound more confident of himself and more inclusive and better if he said, you know, I want Gary Johnson in the debates. You know, 4 years ago when Gary Johnson was running, he said 15% threshold to get into the debates of poll approval is ridiculous. Hillary Clinton would sound more confident. If I sounded confident, like I'm not scared of competition, bring it on, that only helps me. But if I sound like I'm trying to roughshod and get rid of my competition, that does not make me look good. Can only help. I mean, go out there and compete. You know, we have only two choices, pretty much, Republicans or Democrats. There's no competition. When you look at most of the modern European countries where they pay about a fourth of the price of healthcare, where they actually have more successful entrepreneurs, where they have less poverty. I mean, just look at all the stats down, you know, even Denmark, where they don't have a minimum wage. They have no minimum wage, but their unions are strong enough where the people at McDonald's there make $19 an hour, and the hamburgers are still cheaper because they have strong unions. They don't even need a minimum wage. But you know what else they have in all of those countries? They have like three or four at least strong main parties. They have competition. They also have representative democracy, like proportional representation. So if a smaller party wins like 10% of the vote, then they get 10% of the members in Congress. I mean, I think we should have rank voting, which would enable more political parties, more competition. You know, and it would force competition. I mean, can you argue against that? And the way to do that is probably not going to be through the presidential elections. It's going to be supporting independent people in Congress, and they're going to introduce legislation to introduce things like rank voting and none of the above on the ballots and things like that. So, all right, so next issue, last week I talked a little bit about, let's just say, social justice warriors, the alt-right. I don't know if you've heard of these terms, the comment section, you know, how people act all crazy in there. Most of them are probably 12-year-olds, and 12-year-olds don't know how, really much that they don't know. I mean, I thought I knew a lot when I was 12, and by the time I was 24, I knew I didn't know anything, hardly, compared to, you know, and then 36 even more, you know, and but here's some thoughts I was thinking about, because here's consistency, okay? For people who need to hear a little bit of consistency, who need a little instead of anti-inflammatory, let's just call it anti-fallacy. Okay, because this is for the people who think, which I see as a growing meme, that certain populations are more prone to crime. Okay, you think like the black population might be more prone to crime. I'm going to prove you wrong in the next 10 minutes that I have left here, and I'm going to do it factually, scientifically, because you have to be consistent. There's only two things you can believe. Either they're inherently bad and cannot be reformed and the situation is not reversible, etc. Or you believe that it is the environment and there are things that can be reformed in our system and the situation can get better. Now let's take the first example, and this is philosophical here. Philosophy principles. If you believe that they can't be reformed, the situation's irreversible, and it is just what it is, it's the nature of the beast, then you also have to consistently believe that everyone is the same way. Because it was not long ago that Germany created two world wars, and every nation on earth has been atrocious. Look at America in the last 10 years, what we did to Iraq. Okay, either we're completely unfixable or we have the ability for reform. And of course, if you're going to be consistent, you have to be consistent across the board. Consistency is the key to society and legitimacy and having integrity. So if you don't have consistency, then you're not worth anything. Okay, you're not worth listening to. You're the one who is, that idea is unreformable per se. So either you're consistent across the board or you're not. And I think it's common sense that we're all reformable because there's good people in every so-called group, which I like to view people as individuals because they are individuals. And that's common sense. So that also proves that the environment makes a difference, because you look at the general population, you look at like the Milgram effect. If you don't know what the Milgram effect is or the Stanford experience, it proves that people are totally influenced by their environments. How can like people that most people that were in Nazi Germany allow that government to happen, even though most of them, probably like over 80%, were good, honest, probably regular people, solid the earth people, but they allowed that evil government to take hold and they participated with it. Does that mean they're all bad, or does that mean they're affected by their environment, that they're peer pressured, that it was their culture, that hard times like the Great Depression made them desperate and do desperate things and lose some of their humanity and empathy, that they even got in a depression in the first place? Or was it outside events? Either way, it's the environment plays a huge factor. It's not just their inherentness. I mean, you either believe in inherentness or you don't. If you believe in inherentness, then you can't complain about the king and queen. You know, but we know people who inherit wealth, sometimes the later generations lose it. You got to be consistent. You know, either things are inherently bad or we can make a difference. And I believe, and I know, and it's common sense because I thought about it. So assuming now, rationalizing, realizing that things are reformable, what caused the problem in the first place and how can it be fixed? And will reform affect us all in a positive way, not just one group? All right, so I'm looking at my notes right now. So it looks like, let's look at stats. Oh, but look at all the stats. Blacks commit all the crime. Well, your stats don't show you crap. You know, you might look at some stats, but you haven't looked at the stats of the stop and frisk in New York City. If you took out all the stats for the illegal drug war that's going on, you'd throw those stats on their head. You know, half the people in jail are in there for nonviolent drug abuses. And I would hesitate to even call them abuse. You know, you're smoking a green plant. There's nothing wrong with that if you're not hurting anyone. In fact, you might be helping yourself in some cases, not to say be abused. Look at the war in Iraq. The United States killed about a million people in the last 10 years. Is that a crime? Is that on the FBI stat sheets? No, it's not. Is that any different than a mugging? If we went there for oil, is that no different than stealing a purse? I mean, Teddy Roosevelt once said, I like the saying, you know, when we see the difference between stealing a purse compared to stealing like something bigger than that, you know, that's inconsistent. There's no difference. I mean, if we steal all the oil in a country compared to just, you know, robbing someone's purse in a park, I mean, what is worse? I'd say the oil is a lot worse. I mean, we put troops in harm's way for oil, for big oil companies, you know, when we should, over the last 20 years or 30 or 40 years, been in best other forms of energy. If we never went to war over oil, maybe the prices would go up and we'd be forced to invent in new forms of energy instead of feeding our addiction. So you're talking about addicts and addiction and crony corporatism. I mean, one thing conservatives or cuckservatives are consistent with is they focus on the small welfare. The small welfare, they say, oh, blacks have so much welfare, when it's mostly whites that do. But who has the big welfare? It's the government contracts. You know, the Defense Department contracts that get billions of dollars. The amount that regular people get is pennies. It's pennies compared to what big contractors get. And you don't consider that welfare. That is pure welfare, because with that money, they buy mansions. It's welfare. It's money that other people don't get with our tax dollars. You know, so it's just they're dividing and conquering us, the people that play into this crap, whether intentionally or unintentionally. You know, who's being manipulated? Who's focusing on little scraps when there's a big pie sitting on top of the table that you don't even see? So what else is in my notes here? I mean, and who, you know, talking about nonviolent, who was the biggest examples of nonviolence? Martin Luther King Jr., a black person, Gandhi? I mean, we won the American Revolution, yes. And, you know, there has been a lot of Western philosophy from St. Augustine to, you know, tons that were nonviolent, peaceful philosophies. But, I mean, you know, what were some examples that actually caused a revolution that made it happen in real life, that put the theory to practice? You know, and you could say Jesus as well. Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi in the last 100 years. So who are the violent ones? You know, I mean, so let's see what else. So I say treat everyone as an individual. Try to understand, you know, let's work on consensus on what we can get done. We all need to unite, black, white, Black Lives Matter, Tea Party, against wasting our trillions of dollars on the drug war, getting rid of the drug war, re-bringing back what used to be the main export of the United States, industrial hemp, and also growing that into nutritional supplements, you know, medical, self-medicating things that people can grow in their own backyard instead of wasting their hard-earned money on, you know, prescriptions for a lot of uses. You know, people should be growing their whole gardens, fruits, vegetables, etc. I mean, so that way we're more self-sufficient, you know. Getting rid of quotas for cops, I'm sure cops would like that too. I'm sure cops would love getting rid of the war on drugs, most of them, except the ones that, you know, let's get rid of asset forfeiture. Let's pay cops more so they're not, you know, so they don't miss asset forfeiture. Let's get rid of the people who like asset forfeiture. We don't need people in government who like and think asset forfeiture is a good idea, where they take people's property without giving them the due process of a full trial. You know, that should be in our core, our DNA. We should all unite about that. This isn't about blame or trying to make anyone feel guilty or saying that you feel privileged or this or that. This is about moving forward and seeing the facts. Try to argue. If you have an argument about what I'm saying, or if you agree, or if you have a show idea, give me a call. Call me next week. I mean, I got a minute left right now, but area code 646-929-1344. You know, it's about truth. It's about openness, open hearts, open minds, open conversation. I'm not saying people should be banned from saying things I disagree with, just the opposite. I'm saying what I see here, and I want this injected into the conversation because I don't see any arguments against it. If I saw arguments against it, I would think differently. Let's work on reform and consensus on what is common sense. Let's, first thing first, get rid of the darn drug war. Let's bring competition and let's bring our rights. Let's remember the government works for us, not the other way around. We pay them, you know, and we should be all peaceful and civilized. Yes, peaceful protesting would be the way to go. And don't believe all the stats. I mean, just look at the wars themselves and the stats go right out the window. You could count up all the crimes in the last 20 years and they don't even compare to one Iraq war. You know, and don't tell me that doesn't count. I mean, if you look at all the damage and crimes that's been committed to our troops and the country itself and just the dollars that were wasted, we could have paid for college for everyone in the entire country with the trillions that we wasted in the war in Iraq. It just goes on and on and on. I got 10 more seconds. We're out tonight. Have a good evening. Thanks for listening to the Philosophy Show, and we'll see you next week, or, you know, quote-unquote, see you next week. Thanks for listening.